Welcome to In Season, where we explore connections between people, land, plants, and wildlife here in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and it is a beautiful May morning here on the Oregon coast, and I am sitting at Natel Landing at Lewis and Clark National Historic Park, and I am speaking with Kevin Leshinsky, who is the Community Volunteer Ambassador here at Lewis and Clark National Historic Park, and also Carla Cole, who is
the Resources Stewardship Program Lead.
Thank you. I knew I wasn't going to remember that, Carla. It's so nice to see you again, too.
You too.
Thank you both for joining me. This is, I mean, and we could not have asked for a better day to be talking about this. And Kevin, I really want to highlight the work that you're doing here at the park. And maybe tell us a little bit about how you got involved and why you got involved. What is Community Volunteer Ambassador here?
Yeah, so the Community Volunteer Ambassador program is a really great internship through a few different groups, mainly Conservation Legacy. And so our main kind of role is to help get the communities at local parks involved more in the volunteering programs at those parks. And so my role here was specifically to establish the Volunteer Garden Corps, which is our lovely, you know, volunteer group that comes out and helps us work on our gardens. And we used to have one in the form of the volunteer garden parties, but after COVID, it kind of got petered out just for safety reasons. And so we kind of wanted to bring it back, and that's my role here.
That is so cool. How have you had a good response from the community so far? I mean, this just got started in May. So
yeah,
are you reaching out to people? Are some of the old volunteers coming back?
Yeah, so we've had a few outreach events. Obviously, it's still early days. I think we just finished week three, so you know, we're still getting started. But we've definitely had a pretty good community response already. We already have a couple of regulars who are coming in, you know, every week showing up.
You need those regulars.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can definitely see that a lot of folks are definitely interested in this program.
And tell us about I think when most people think about national parks, especially this one, you're thinking kind of about the wild areas, there's trails through the trees. What are the gardens that you're talking about? Because I don't think about this place as having gardens.
Yeah, so it's kind of a bit of a deceptive term, because I think garden and gardening in general, you kind of imagine you're picturing either like a veggie garden, you know, in planter boxes, or you're picturing like a cultivated flower field. And here,
you guys are not putting together hanging baskets.
No, that is not what our role here is. I mean, we could probably, but no. For our focus is to highlight specifically some of our native plants and the, you know, North Coast kind of plants that historically were present here before some of the like European invasives showed up. And so our demonstration gardens are meant to highlight a lot of these native plants and sort of demonstrate how this landscape might have looked before Europeans landed here. And one of the other highlights that we like to do is the ways in which these plants can be utilized by people, especially with our ethnobotanical garden here at Natel Landing, is the various plants that are edible that a lot of folks, you know, might not know about, things like stinging nettle, and all of that, and the various uses that we have for these plants.
That is so fascinating to me. And we were speaking earlier before we started recording about how many plants here are edible. I mean, not all of them, and definitely be careful before you just go
ask
snacking
if you're unsure
in the landscape. But this is an incredibly abundant edible landscape here on the, you know, on this kind of Pacific Northwest coast. And I love, too, that it's seasonal. We were just looking at one of these plots. It's more your wetland plot.
Yeah.
And, Carly, you were mentioning that the camas is the bloom is almost gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a few lingering of those beautiful blue flowers. But then in the fall, you can dig up the bulbs and eat them, right?
Right.
You said you've done that in the past, and maybe not the best cooking experience. You need to work
on. Well,
it's
tricky. Yeah. Traditionally, they're cooked in underground pits for days. They have a certain sugar in their bulbs that is indigestible until it's very thoroughly cooked. So that's a lesson that the Corps of Discovery learned when they were here. And we noticed
you learned it as well. So basically, don't try doing that in an Instapot.
Well, you can. I think it's just maybe 12 hours or so in an Instapot might be better than 4.
Yeah.
Okay. But we've co-planted it with Wapato in that little wetland area. So that's another really delicious, edible underground tuber. And we've harvested both out of the garden over the years, kind of in the tradition of keeping it living. It was a book by Doug Doerr looking at indigenous lifeways in this area and the concept of while you're harvesting, you're also caring for the land, and it's a reciprocal relationship. And so that's what we're really, this garden was built in 2015, and we've been stewarding it and gardening it. And we ultimately would like to have, be able to have the capacity, which we're hoping to get with more volunteers, to be able to do more harvest and tending in that way that it was kind of intended and built for.
Because, I mean, that's something that I remember learning about here, you know, that so often, I think, when Europeans arrived, that, they didn't see that these plants were being cultivated. That it just didn't look like a farm to them. And I think about the way my farm looks, and it's, you know, row crops. And that's not how indigenous people here farm or cultivate plants. But it looks like this, but they are being cultivated. They're being cared for. And so part of that is the working of them, and digging them up and moving them around and tending to them. So are you learning, Kevin, are you learning a lot about these plants?
Yes, I am. I have to say, it really changes the way that you even look at the natural world around you, because I find myself, you know, kind of even when I'm not here, when I'm just out and about in my, you know, day-to-day life, I'll be looking at a group of plants and I start wondering, oh, I wonder which one of these are invasives, which ones are natives, you know, how were these used? How can they be used? And I think that's what's really special about getting your hands on and like kind of actually working with this and learning it, is you start applying it to outside of, you know, and it really changes your relationship with the natural world. And I think that's what's really, really special about this. And specifically like this ethnobotanical garden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me more about the volunteer program. So, and this is like, do people have to have a lot of gardening experience? Can they be novices?
You can be as novice. You can have never even stepped foot in a garden. That's kind of how I was
so
when
great.
I was here. I need to say, you know, it's a bit of a surprise to people to learn. I was not an outdoorsy person, you know, before starting to work here. This was kind of a recent discovery of mine of like this passion. And I think that it's, you know, even if you're not sure if you'd be interested, it never hurts to show up. You know, this is a very low commitment, I would say, program. So you can just show up if you want to and then never come again if it's not your cup of tea. But, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, we take anyone and everyone who wants to learn. The only thing we really ask is that you are open-minded and you are also ready to listen to folks, because we also don't necessarily want people pulling up the plants that we do want.
And that is dangerous too, because a lot of times people sometimes people think of the plants that are indigenous to this area as weeds.
Yes.
I mean, I know a number of people early days when I lived here, and I was doing some gardening, like landscaping work, as we were getting our farm established. And I remember being in a garden and they had this huge patch of salal that they just wanted me to dig up and get rid of because it was a weed. And I was like, it's not a weed.
Yeah.
Why are you making me do this? It's awful. So so you do have to know. So so pay attention. Don't pull up the precious
thing. And I mean, I'm still working on my plant ID. So I'm constantly, you know, asking some of the folks here who work with the National Park. I'm always like, hey, what's this plant, you know, like what's this one, what does it do? And I will say everyone is always really excited when you ask questions, so like don't be afraid to, they love talking about it. All right, that's one thing about our national park rangers, they love talking about the plants.
Oh yeah, they do. I know, it's and it's really delightful, and there's such a wealth of knowledge here. I think that's what's so cool, and what a great opportunity for local volunteers to get to connect. I mean, just to get to be in this park is so beautiful, and then to connect to the plants in this way and to learn so much about just, it's such a vast number of plants that are indigenous to this area, and they are so fascinating, and so many of them have usefulness, both, you know, just as food or as medicine or any of those things.
And textiles, the more you learn about the native plants here, it's hard to find a plant that doesn't have either a medicinal or edible or textile or use to it.
Yeah. And I think you're right, Kevin. It's such a wise observation that it's hard to look at the landscape the same way again once you start seeing all these plants and you start to recognize them, you know, as you're driving along the highway and it's in a ditch. And it's like, oh, hey, I know that plant.
Yeah.
It's so satisfying.
You can impress your friends.
I know. We'll really impress them if you hang out with Carla enough and get your plant Latin.
Yeah.
Because we were talking, you're like, I have terrible plant Latin. It's just never really stuck in me. But I'm good with common names.
Yeah.
And I know some. I know a little bit of Latin. So you're talking too about. So we were talking about the volunteer program. So you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to have any gardening tools. Do you have to bring tools? Do you have to bring your own tools? Bring your own gloves?
You can if you want to. If you have them and you'd rather use yours because you know how to care for them, you can absolutely bring them. But we also always provide the tools that are necessary for the project. We also have snacks.
Snacks are good.
Just a little shout out there.
Feed people and
thank you to Cynthia from the Lewis and Clark Historical
Association.
Yep. So they helpfully provided us with some snacks. And so just bring, you know, sunscreen, good outdoor clothes. Definitely it's getting sunnier, warmer weather, so you know, bring hats, things like that. You know, bring a water bottle if you have it. We also always have water on site as well. So you know, just come prepared to get dirty as well.
And how long are the gardening sessions? Do they usually go for?
So we hold them on Thursdays from 1 to 4. Occasionally we might end a little earlier, but we usually start at 1 and end around between 3 and 4, just to give time for like cleanup and everything as well.
Yeah. And I was in our initial communication, you were talking too about sometimes you have people come and do presentations or demonstrations or education, kind of above and beyond what you might get, just like show up and pull some weeds, you know. So can you talk a little bit about like some of those possibilities?
So we're kind of still planning those out, but as kind of we get more into the swing of things, we are hoping to have, one of the ones that we might have come up is actually Carla here.
Carla
is going to come in and talk about doing some plant ID and like specifically identifying native plants and indigenous plants. We're also hoping to have some presentations done about like tool upkeep and how to maintain your own garden tool. So
that is so useful.
Yeah, if you like, because you know, I certainly don't know how to do all of that. I learned so much. You know, you got to clean them first of all, which you know. It's not necessarily because you're like, oh, well, it's dirty and it's just going to go back in dirt. Why should I, you know,
clean it in between?
Yeah.
And sharpening and all those things. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Working with well-maintained tools is transformative.
Yes.
I am not always not always the person who maintains her tools the best.
Yeah.
But definitely I know the difference when it's when it's well-maintained. That's cool.
Yeah.
So those are some great, great opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And is it mostly going to be here in this ethnobotanical garden, or is it in different parts of the park as well?
So we do different parts of the park as well. Right now we're kind of focused here because there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. Right now we're deep in our weed suppression season. So that's kind of the main things that we've been doing, as well as some like plant or path rechipping. But we also are planning, actually, if anyone is interested in kayaking, there might be a iris, yellow flag iris pruning that we do on the kayaks on the river. So that might be coming up
as well. Because that's a pretty invasive
It's one of our high priority invasives. And the pruning that we do is we kayak along and snip off the fruit. So
they don't, they're not, at least
so
not receding.
Least we're holding them in place and not letting it spread further.
So
that's a really fun one.
Does it, does the seed just like drop in the water and then float
away?
They look
like little green bananas, the seed pods, and they float. So they're incredibly,
they can go, and that's how
they can spread up and down with the tide all throughout the estuary that way.
That would be a really fun one.
Yeah.
So you're just in a kayak going along and snipping.
Yeah.
So you're not having to pull anything.
Nope.
No tipping over.
No, we do that on our own.
That sounds like a really fun one.
Yeah, so that's one that's coming up. I know that we also have the rain garden that's in front of the visitor center that we tend to, which has some of our other plants that are maybe a bit more woody. I know we have an Oregon grape in there, which is very cool. And then we are also planning on doing some of the trails a little bit, like walking along, doing some weed pulling, Along those trails. And those are just kind of the ones we have planned thus far. So
there's many opportunities. Yes. And is there a season for this? Does it go through sort of fall?
So ideally, this is going to be a pretty year-round program, but the projects are going to change from season to season. And kind of our focus right now, like I said, is our weeding and, you know, path rechipping. Then as we get more into the fall, things will switch more to planting and getting ready, you know, for spring again, as well as doing some harvest in, like, the later months. So it really just, like, as the seasons change, I think that's what's so exciting about doing kind of a gardening focus is it doesn't get too stale because you're always kind of doing something different as the seasons change.
Absolutely. I just want to take a moment to reintroduce you both. Yep. And just to let our listeners know that you're listening to In Season here on KMUN 91.9 FM. And today I'm at Lewis and Clark National Historic Park and I'm talking with Kevin Leshinsky, who is the Community Volunteer Ambassador here at the park, and also Carla Cole, who has a natural resource title that I keep forgetting. And unfortunately, we're old friends, and she's going to forgive me. It sounds very fancy.
It keeps changing over the years.
This is the problem. Your job title
resource
keeps changing.
Stewardship,
it's like my brain doesn't have the capacity to remember all your job titles, but she's a wonderful resource here about... Yeah. And it has incredible deep knowledge about the plants that grow here in the park. And we're sitting here at Natel Landing, and there is this beautiful ethnobotanical garden. And I wanted... Carla, maybe ask you this, because many people might not be familiar with the term ethnobotany or ethnobotanical. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
It's really just the study of ethno-humans and botany plants. So it's how humans and plants have interacted over the years. It usually has an indigenous focus traditionally, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. It's really just the study of...
how humans interact with plants.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And so the focus here is on these native plants. Mm-hmm. And so you have these different zones here. So you have like more of a wetland zone and upland zone. And they're all kind of within... there's definitely dog noises in the background. I'm just saying. You're not crazy. And... sorry, just friends walking past you. It's one of the beautiful things about being in a park, I have to say, and that I love about our community is how easy it is to run into people that
and
who all come and share this park. And it is such a wonderful thing that we have here. Mm-hmm. But back to the ethnobotanical garden. So you have these different zones with, the differences are subtle. I mean, there's definitely roses in different areas, but so how are you choosing to focus these different areas? I mean, are you trying to focus different plant communities that would mm-hmm. naturally grow together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the design concept on this, we designed it back in 2015, and it's four different mounds. And our idea was to try to kind of have a little microcosm of the indigenous landscape from the ocean up to Saddle Mountain. Little bits of it concentrated here in the natural plant associations communities they would occur in nature. So we've talked about the wetland mound, and then we have a forest plant community mound, and then one that's sort of the kind of opening edge meadow berry field forest edge sort of plant community, and then the fourth mound behind us is a coastal prairie plant community focus. So that's how they originally started. Then over the years, it's been really interesting to see what plants have really thrived and what have blinked out. So down that berry mound, we originally had a stinging nettle patch there, and then realized eventually it was just too hot and sunny for it, and then the roses took over. And so we've learned a lot.
So the plants are telling you where they want to be and where they don't want to be.
Yes. And the roses love it, as you can see.
As do the strawberries.
As do the strawberries. The strawberries have jumped from mound to mound, so that's been really fun to see, too. We only planted them on the prairie mound, and now they're everywhere.
Well, and part of the challenge is that it's all in one place. So this is all kind of one ecosystem here, and you're trying to represent these different areas.
And we've unnaturally mushed them close to each other, yes.
So, I mean, they're also telling you, hey, you know, I get what you're trying to do here, but maybe not.
Yeah.
But that is also really fascinating, too. And Kevin, you were saying earlier that part of it is like now digging up plants and moving them to new locations because you've got so many plants.
Yeah, we're actually, we kind of started almost a new baby mound just from one of our early weeks of the Garden Corps. We were re-chipping one of the paths, and we were just pulling so many plants up, and they were desirable plants. They were just, like, in the middle of the walkway, so we didn't want to get rid of them. So we've just, like, slowly started expanding to kind of new mounds, and those plants are actually doing pretty well, even though they were planted pretty late in the season. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. So thank you for that recent rain we've had.
Yeah.
That's so great. And that is so wonderful, too, that you're at the point now where you are propagating your own plants.
Yeah.
And can now start moving them around to different places in the park. Do you? And so the park struggles with a lot of invasives here too. I mean, I see that just walking around. Is this also a way to kind of try to stem the tide a little bit and allow some of the native vegetation?
Yes, absolutely. One of the big things is like even just reducing some of the biomass, as it sounds so professional, basically just means taking out the green bits and helping, giving the native plants the room to spread and just having enough of it that it covers up that ground that invasive plants would otherwise inhabit is helpful in itself. So that's kind of another one of the things that I've been learning about is just the various ways that like even just a little bit, you know, of suppression can help a lot. But it is a constant battle.
I would just add to that, as we were before the interview, you were noticing all the pollinators still on the last camas flowers, you know, and I think for the one of the things the garden shows us here is just how every square foot counts. You know, every bit of land that we can cultivate the natives and encourage the natives and hold back the invasives, it makes a difference.
Absolutely. I mean, and I love that it's, I mean, it is all these native plants, but the bloom happens at different times. Mm-hmm. And so you have food for your native bees, your native pollinators. I just saw a hummingbird on one of those plants over there. That there is food for them, you know, for
throughout
as long
the
as
season.
There possibly can be, as long as these things are blooming. And that's so key to encourage these plants to thrive. It's really beautiful. I just am so excited and really impressed with how far these gardens have come along. I mean, I have seen them since, I remember 2015 when you started here, and it was like, oh, that's a cute little project.
Yeah.
Carl. I mean, I didn't mean to be patronized, but I was like, oh yeah, it's going to be really sweet. And now it's like, oh, this is...
Now it's
really
hard to keep it contained.
Impressive. Yeah, well, obviously it wants to expand and grow. Do you see visitors engaging with it? Do you see people? Do you ever have, like, if someone isn't of, like, doesn't want to come out and garden and volunteer, but they're curious about this garden, are there ever presentations here or talks that you might give?
Well, I think we're working on that. Traditionally, we haven't had the capacity to give official presentations, but every time I've been down here weeding, always someone walks by and has a question about the plants, and that's super fun for me, as Kevin alluded to. You asked me about plants. Like,
she won't stop talking.
But Kevin,
you're going to be this way too now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I am already starting to be this way. I know my friends all think I'm going a little plant crazy, but yeah.
Good. Carla's infectious. Yeah. But that is such a wonderful gift to give to visitors too, because you have people coming from all over the world here and encountering this landscape and not knowing that this isn't just like municipal landscaping, that this is what, you know, these are the plants that are native to this area. And this is, I mean, that's a wonderful story to be telling.
Yeah. And I love when we're down in the garden, working the garden. So we're not only helping the garden thrive and survive, but we're also just kind of spontaneously and naturally providing that education and outreach for the visitors walking by.
Yeah. Every time the Garden Corps has met, we've always have a visitor coming up being like, oh, what are you guys doing today? And then we kind of explain the method. And sometimes they actually know what the method is, but sometimes they're like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I need to try that at my garden. Like, I didn't know that this, you know, method of weed suppression, you know, existed. Because these are common struggles that everyone kind of has in their own gardens, of course. Yeah.
We were talking earlier with Love for the cardboard and wood chip suppression method, which is one of my favorites. So I'm glad to see that employed here as well.
Yep.
It is just, it's so inspiring. And I love that you're giving opportunities for people to learn about gardening or for experienced gardeners to maybe work with plants that they've never worked with before. But in thinking about it as community and community volunteers, that also just in this, like, engaging with visitors, engaging with other people in the community to tell the story of these plants and this landscape and why it's so special. I think that's such a great opportunity. So before I get sucked into plant talk again and we run out of time, I want to make sure that we tell people how, if they're interested, mm-hmm. and they want to know more, and maybe they want to become one of your garden volunteers,
yes.
how do they do that?
Yeah, so kind of the main way that we like to highlight is going to volunteer.gov, searching up Lewis and Clark National Historical Park, and you'll see all of our volunteer opportunities. But I also want to recognize that volunteer.gov is not necessarily the easiest website to use. It can be kind of intimidating, even on our staff end. Trust me, you know, we understand. So if that's just like you don't really want to go through that, another way to do so is to email us at Louie_volunteers. That's LEWI_volunteer@nps.gov. And then we can add you to our new newsletter that we have actually been sending out the past few weeks. And it lets you know kind of where the Garden Corps takes place each week. Another way is to just come by the visitor center and let us know that you're interested. And if that's just the easiest method for you, you can just show up, say, hey, I want to join the Garden Corps. And, you know, we'll give you the application, or it's not even an application. You just sign the agreement and we can add you to that email list.
I love how easy and flexible you guys yeah. are. This is wonderful.
Yeah.
Because that's what's so nice. Sometimes it is really hard when you have to go yes. through a bunch of technical stuff to
yeah.
volunteer. But just to know, just drive up, walk into the visitor center.
Yeah.
I'm interested in being a gardener yeah. here. And they'll connect you.
Yes.
They'll yeah. find a way to connect you.
You can even just call our front desk and they'll send you my way. They all know where to reach us and who's in charge of what. So that's another easy way to do it. We can all handle it, because I understand that volunteer.gov is not the easiest.
It can be complicated. Sometimes those really big, those websites that do a lot for a lot of mm-hmm. people can be really hard to get specific.
Yes.
So you have no excuse. Community.
Yeah.
There's many, many ways to get involved and to get engaged. And I mean, like, I'm itching to go pull some of that grass right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can just say it's incredibly beautiful out here. And, you know, you get to engage with these beautiful plants, amazing birds, wildlife, so many cool things. What an amazing opportunity. So if you love gardens, or you're just garden curious, or you're native plant curious, I think this is a really cool thing to do. Yep. I'm so excited, Kevin, that you're here. And yep. Carla, what a great program for the park.
Thank you. Yeah. We're so excited Kevin is here, too.
I mean, yeah.
as you know, we're a super small staff.
Yeah.
And we relied on volunteers and multiple fronts for many years. Mm-hmm. And we need help. And so we're so happy to have Kevin here. And
yeah.
Because we're so small, we don't have time to ask for help sometimes. Yeah. So it's good to have a volunteer ambassador like Kevin who
well,
can concentrate on that.
Yeah, that can be such a hard thing sometimes. You just because you need so much help, it's hard to yeah. even know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
What a gift
yeah.
to have your involvement here. And I assume the gift goes both ways.
Yes, I'm very happy to be here. I love this park very dearly. So it's become a very important part of for me personally as well.
I share that sentiment. Yeah. It is such an amazing resource. And, you know, for those of you out there, if you haven't visited Lewis and Clark National Historical Park, which is also a big mouthful, mm-hmm. But if you haven't visited the park recently, I really encourage you to take some time this spring, this summer, this fall, whenever, and, you know, walk the Natal Landing Walk, go do one of the trails, do the Fort to Sea if
yeah.
you've got it in you. But just come and engage with the park. It's so beautiful. And what a wonderful, wonderful resource. I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Yeah. Thank you for having us. We're happy to talk.
It was great, and I'm so inspired. And I want to taste some of that cannabis. We need to get up and roast it. I've tasted your...
Hopefully we'll roast it better next time.
I've tasted your...